It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy on the road edition. This is number 350. It's not even 7 a.m. My name is Joey. That's Len, buddy. What's going on? I am going to kill you for making me record at this time. This is so bloody early.
It's not that early, Joey. Really? Is it that early? Like, to be honest, you're up and about more to this time. Like, this is like late morning, right?
Yeah, usually we're you and I are chatting at this time already.
Yeah, it's almost nap time for me at this time. But yeah, no, it's all good. I hope you're enjoying it wherever you are. And yeah, I'm going to be doing the same over here.
I like it, man. I'm in Montreal. My wife is about, 10 feet from me in bed, probably digesting memes. We went for dinner last night with some friends. Today, big day, Len, the Bitcoin conference. I'll be on stage with Madex and Francis at noon-ish, noon or 12:30. I don't know if you saw, but the Canadian hockey team lost to the American hockey team 9-4 yesterday in the inaugural Satoshi Cup. Shameful. They had no subs. Did you know that? It was five guys, no subs.
And they had a former pro player on
it. Not pro. He played for MSU. Brandon Gentile, he was on the show. He was on our show, the CBP, maybe 2 months ago, the Bitcoin trading cards guy. He's a stud. How are we supposed to know?
Well, what do we have to offer? We're rolling out four lines of Jabroni. We got one line,
Yeah. We had a bunch of Cicerellis playing against Gretzky's, so it wasn't great.
Cicerelli was a great player, man. And not only that, he went to jail one time for stick work.
Nice. I like that. That is a good pies on there.
Two-handed Luke Richardson in Toronto, and they decided to put him in jail for a day. Anyways.
That's good. Anyway, so we got lots to talk about today. Last week's quote: "The majority is never right. Never, I tell you. That's one of these lies in society that no free and intelligent man can help rebelling against. Who are the people that make up the biggest proportion of the population? The intelligent ones or the fools?" So that was by Henrik Ibsen. Probably saying that wrong. Dale guessed it right. So good job, Dale. This week's quote, Len: "Life's tragedy is that we get old too soon and wise too late." God, is that ever true? If you know the person who said that, throw it in the comments. No searching, no Googling. You guys know the rules. Don't pervert the process. And if you get it right first, you get the next round of domain hosting renewal on EasyDNS. So Len, we got to, I think by my count here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories. Oh my God, what the timing on this? Okay, whatever, where are we gonna start?
Not working, we'll just make do with what we have. Yeah, so Android users, let's start with that, because there's some malware that is being targeting popular apps on the store, the Android App Store. And just in general, because Android users, they're going out and they're downloading a lot of these popular apps, and they may not be on the Play Store per se, because they're the sideloading feature, it enables people just to do a little bit more. So there's one thing about having sideload options out there: it gives people maybe sometimes too much liberties, and they just take advantage of it and get owned in the process. So these are malicious apps. They're mimicking well-known social media platforms like WhatsApp, Instagram, Snapchat, and they're tricking users into downloading them. And when they do, they ask for additional permissions, which seem kind of odd, and they try to get access to the phones, the contact messages, call logs, typically stuff that normally wouldn't be done in these type of apps. And once they are granted this type of permission, it's game on, and the malware then steals sensitive information. And what they do with that, well, it could be a number of different things. They could sell it on the dark web, or hackers could use it to try to commit identity theft or fraud. So there's a little bit of options that are available to them. So it just, you need to be understand what are the things you should be doing to avoid any types of downloading of these malwares. Don't just go and download an APK and install it. That's the wrong way of doing things. I know you may be saving some money. Say there's an app that costs money on the Play Store, and you get a free APK. Well, it may not be free after all. And also, even if you're simply just relying on the Google Play Store, the Play Store is pretty good in terms of providing some security measures, but there's still the occasional slip-ups. So you have to be even cautious when downloading from the Play Store. So what you should be doing is reading the review ratings before downloading any app. You know, if you look at that, if you see there's a long list of years worth of ratings, and they seem to be in line with the app you're trying to download or install or whatever, then likely it's going to be the real McCoy. If not, if it's just a bunch of recent reviews, well, you got to raise red flags there. Also, take permission when you do download something and when it's asking for permissions and you install the app and it's saying, I want access to this, access to that. That could be another red flag. So try to avoid those types of apps. So there's are some precautions you could do out there. Just simply employ them. If not, you know, you're just going to give a lot of information and you're going to get owned in the process.
I was talking to our buddy Wayfaring Scribe yesterday, and some sort of on the ground reporting from him on this side loading and people not taking care. He was at a minor league hockey game, and there was a QR code flashed on the Jumbotron or whatever, and people had a chance to, I guess, enter to win a fast food meal at some local fast food joint. And he was pointing out, much like you're pointing out, people don't think before they do stuff. It's just, he said there's like thousands of people there just blindly scanning this code on their phone. Same phone that has your banking info, same phone that has your PayPal, same phone that has your Instagram, same phone that has all this stuff. I don't know what to say. You and me talked about the sideloading thing for Android before. Do you still think the iPhone stance broadly, like I know in the EU now there's you know, separate app stores and sideloading options, barely, thanks to some petty action by Apple. But do you still come down on this, the phone should have an open ecosystem, or is there a case to be made, you think, more and more for the closed ecosystem that Apple favors?
Yeah, 100% open ecosystem. Let the user decide what is best. If they want to just download stuff and get, you know, get hacked or have information stolen in the process, so be it. I'd rather live in that environment, in a free environment, and I'm able to choose and do what I want, rather than being constrained by the walls that's being imposed upon me by, I guess in this case, Apple.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's still a, you know, handy warning, I would say, these stories about the fake apps. The other thing I would point out, and they make note of this in the article through the picture, like the app that you download is almost never the same name, the same publisher. Like you got to review this stuff when you try and grab something off the app store. It's not official, but these are the same people then who replied to Nigerian Prince emails, right? There's not much I can do about it from here.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what's going on in India. And the Indian government, they're working hard to crack down on cybercrime over there. And these are particularly scams where criminals impersonate law enforcement personnel officials to extort money from victims. And in these scams, the criminals pose as police officers or other law enforcement officials and contact victims through Skype. What a way to contact people as a police officer. Not simply just knocking on their door, I'm just going to use a Skype to engage them. And with this, they use scare tactics and intimidation to trick victims into believing they are in legal trouble. And the criminals may threaten the victims with arrest or other legal action if they don't comply with their demands. And the scammers may also use fake video calls to appear more legitimate. And they may spoof phone numbers to make it appear as if they're calling from law enforcement agencies. They do this even over here. We get those calls from Peter from with a New Delhian accent trying to sell us some duct cleaning services. Either way, in some cases, we have criminals may even try to steal personal information from victims and use it to threaten them even further. So they have the Indian Cyber Crime Coordination Center. That's the I4C. Man, these guys got to be busy given what's going on over there. They're working to stop these scams. And the I4C is a government agency that is responsible for coordinating cybercrime investigations all across India. And they're working to raise awareness on these scams to help victims who have been targeted. So I don't know what else to say about this, but if you're getting some random Skype calls while you're in India and it seems to be coming from the local law enforcement, or any type of law enforcement, I would be very concerned about that being legitimate or not. Probably isn't. If it was, let's be honest, if the police are really trying to reach out to people, are they doing this through Skype? They're just going to knock on your door, maybe call you directly, but definitely not Skype. It's not going to be a cold call via Skype.
How about the the story here? They reach out via Skype to tell you that there's a parcel in your name that has contraband items and they need to be like, can you imagine? I don't want to be too mean to these people, but Jesus, how do you fall for this? Like, what, how does this happen? If you didn't order, you know, a brick of Colombian white and they call you and tell you that there's a brick of Colombian white with your name on it, and they do so via Skype. Like, you know, they're not going to be so gentle, and they're not going to ask you for App Store gift cards to solve the problem, you know? Like, but it just happens over and over again. Every week we have a story like this. It's great.
Stupidity. Anyways, let's talk about Lockbit ransomware, and this is causing some real issues. It's a new campaign which is distributing this new Lockbit Black ransomware. And attackers behind this campaign, they're leveraging a botnet called 4PX. I kind of like that name, 4PX. It's I like the use of the PH.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I give it a 2 or 3 maybe. Yeah, it's not bad. It's original. It's original. Yeah.
And this 4PX is delivering the Lockbit ransomware through emails. And these emails, it's coming from a person by the name of Jenny Green. And his, her, they, it, I don't know, email address is showing as jenny@gsd.com. And so if you receive something from Jenny at that particular email address, also receiving the subject line, your document, well, you might not want to open the attachment, because within that email, there is an email attachment that is a zip file. And if you do unzip it and open it, it contains an executable file that downloads the ransomware. And it's this first time that this is going to be using the Lockbit that's being sent out through emails like this at such a large scale. And I don't know why anybody would receive an email from a random person and then open a document and then execute the document. People, this is on you. But you know what I'm wondering too, on top of that, doesn't like the large scale email providers like the Gmails, the Hotmails, Yahoos, whatever, whoever's still out there, don't they do some sort of cleansing from the emails to ensure that there's no ransomware or hacks or spam or anything within it? Or did they stop that practice, or did this basically fall through the cracks? I'm not sure exactly what happened, but that's a story. And just don't open up shit that you see in your email. It does not make sense.
I think maybe the scanning is headed off by the fact that it's a zip file, right? So maybe you can't, or maybe like the baked in, and by the way, like the baked in virus scan is not reliable anyways. Like, I still wouldn't be opening stuff even if Gmail or whatever told me it was clean. But if you zip a file, maybe it's harder to get the full scan done. I don't, again, like who's opening zip files from addresses they don't recognize? Like, who zips up a document, you know, like documents? Like, this is what I don't understand. It's crazy. And if you look at the archive file here, it's you know, clearly not anything to do with the document or anything else. It's all just executable, you know, scripting or whatever. I don't know what you would call this. It's just like, again, Len, who's doing this? Who are the people who are falling for this? Don't the people who come up with these scams realize that if you just keep scamming like the lowest people on the ladder, you're not going to get much out of it? Like, I noticed in the story here, it doesn't really talk about all the, you know, the spoils that they've garnered with this con. So, like, I mean, who's opening this that has anything worth stealing? I don't know.
People that really want to learn what's in my document. Right? Like, how important is the information?
The name of the file?
I want to know. I don't care what's in it. Let's talk about Meta and Meta. They're considering
the weekly Meta story. Perfect. Right on time.
Yeah. But this is concerning, though, because they're considering a shift in their content moderation policies. And this is potentially prioritizing global human rights norms over U.S. free speech standards. So if you look at what's going on right now, the developments is they have an oversight board, and this was established to review content moderation decisions, and they have expressed support for basing decisions on international human rights standards. And they've also committed to uphold human rights principles in their corporate rights policy. Very vague, but anyways, if you dig down deeper, look at what the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, it protects freedoms of speech, right? It's limiting the government's ability to censor content, and social media platforms like Meta are private companies and not government entities. So they still play a significant role in online communications. But the international human rights framework, like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, emphasizes the right of free speech, but also acknowledges limitations to others' rights and public's safety. And this can include restrictions on hate speech, incitement to violence, and information that can harm. So Meta, they're trying to do a balancing act here, and they're facing pressure from both sides. In the US, it's criticized for censorship and stifling free speech. And on the other side, in other countries, it's criticized for allowing hate speech and harmful content to spread. So they're trying to find a balance here to appease everybody. So they are going to be applying these globally applied standards that could lead to a more consistent approach of content moderation across various countries. And yeah, that's basically the story. And it's kind of concerning depending on how far they encroach, especially as we're leading towards an election. And Meta can be an important tool by politicians to ensure that one party gets elected over another, just simply based on how they're moderating or restricting freedom of speech. I understand they could go too far, but I'm just very concerned about how far Meta is going to take it and how this power is going to be used. Very powerful tool, especially in the wrong people's hands, and I have some concerns about it.
These guys never get it right, do they? Like, when was the last time Meta took a public stance on speech policy and got it right? Never. The best part about this is the only people who get it right less are these, you know, vacuous global agencies talking about hate speech. They always get it wrong. Hate speech isn't, you know, in my opinion, a real thing. All speeches should be protected, short of, like, you know, calling for violence, of course, but stuff like that is clear and obvious. In the context of the election, like, what do you think is going to happen with this? Not like I'm not asking you, but sort of the royal you. You already know. It happened last election, happened in 2016. Everything they don't like becomes a violation of their policies on speech, a violation of their policies on hate or misinformation or whatever. And it gets blocked in favor of the candidates and narratives they like. So get off Facebook. Like, I don't know who's still looking at Facebook for news or anything besides Marketplace. But get off it. These guys don't, they don't care about you. They don't care about free speech. And they're actively trying to influence the way you think.
Let's talk about what's going on in Australia. And there was a major disruption to, oh, looks like we lost Joey, and I'll just continue on. And let me bring him back in this stage. There you are, Joey. Welcome back. Anyways, there was a major disruption in Australia for their superannuation fund called UniSuper. So UniSuper is their superannuation fund, and the people managing it were locked out of its online accounts for an entire week. Now, given the fact what they're trying to do, a lot of people's money is invested into it, this is very scary stuff. And what's the culprit behind all this? Well, it's Google Cloud. And they inadvertently deleted their account. That's pretty scary stuff. Imagine if you were relying on money to be sent to you from this fund on a weekly or monthly basis in order to make make ends meet. And just because of a snafu from Google, you're not able to get it. Anyways, this incident, it shows that there's an inconvenience, that's to say the least, with UniSuper, because critical online accounts were locked out for a significant duration. And both UniSuper and Google Cloud acknowledged the issue. And good thing they did here, though, they offered apologies for the disruption. So thank you very much for that. But the people looking for money, they don't give a crap about that. But anyways, they are saying that they are assuring users that their data was secure through the whole ordeal. And Google Cloud also went a step further to implement additional safeguards to prevent a similar accidental deletion from happening again. But really, it just goes to show you that how much people and businesses, in this case, this large entity, relies on cloud services. And a simple snafu could lock people from getting access to their accounts. I'm wondering if they have sufficient backups, if there's a large-scale or long-term blackout or a lockout, what options they have. There's a lot of questions I don't have answers to right now. I'm not confident that they have everything solved. A simple apology doesn't do anything. Was any information stolen in the process? I don't know, but you know what? There's a lot of questions here, and I would be very concerned if I was one of the users, basically anybody, of this UniSuper superannuation fund.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you say? It's 620,000 members without their money. Why is this stuff? I mean, I think everything is probably relying on cloud at some level these days, but you can't tell me that this is a good idea to have a super ann fund that people rely on to live just black out and not have like a really high quality, very transparent explanation as to what happened. Because to me, you know, $125 billion in funds under management, that's enough to really, you know, really cause a hiccup for a lot of people. And again, the explanation is not really satisfactory. Not even any credit monitoring here either. I mean, not that they were quote unquote hacked, but something clearly happened here. And yeah. Again, like, do you trust Google to give you a full breakdown of what happened? No. Why would they? There's no incentive for them to do that. So I don't know. Not much you can do though. This is one of those things where you're kind of, you know, forced to use it if you're in this fund. You're at the mercy of the least competent person in the chain, right? And so in this case, someone deleted the account. Like, I don't know, pretty dumb. Not much you can do.
Joey, our accounts at Breach Forum, it's gone because there was a major a crackdown on cybercrime, and the FBI shut down Breach Forums, and this was a notorious marketplace for hackers. Not only that, they also went after Telegram, and it just highlights how safe Telegram really is. We'll get to that in a moment. Mm-hmm. So this forum, the Breach Forums, this was taken down. It was called Raid Forums, and it was taken down by law enforcement in 2022, and it served as a hub for buying and selling a variety of stolen data, including login credentials, credit card information, and other personal information. And I suspect they were also increasing their database through the UniSuper that they just they probably got information in the last story. But anyways, the FBI, along with other international law enforcement partners, they seized control of this Breach Forums and also their Telegram channel back on Tuesday. And the Department of Justice announced a takedown, and they're highlighting the collaborative effort between different countries to combat cybercrime, giving each other a pat on the back and saying we did a great job. But I'll just go on a side note here. Like, this goes to show you that Telegram is not a decentralized and not secured way of talking to people. If they could take control of a Telegram channel, well, it means that they have access to some sort of backdoor to it. Either way, Breach Forums, they have gained a reputation as the go-to destination for cyber criminals engaging in a variety of illegal activities, and the forum offered a platform for buying and selling a lot of stolen data. So yeah, the FBI is currently investigating the users of that forum and likely will be pursuing legal action against those who are involved in criminal activity on that forum. For people that have been using it, hopefully they haven't been doing anything illegal or wrong, and you know, it goes to show you that using a VPN and other things might be the best way of doing things. But I don't say that people should do anything illegal. But there's, you know what I mean? It just goes to show you that using a VPN is probably the best course of action for a number of different things.
Don't use Telegram and use VPN. Telegram, we've talked about on the show before, and we've talked about it offline too. It's not secure. It's clearly not secure. And there's always a push to get people onto Telegram, I think, by some of these agencies. That's my opinion, that they're behind some of the stories you see about like Signal being compromised, their iMessage being compromised. You know, I as far as the forum, I don't know why you'd be wandering around on something like this with an open connection, but clearly people were. And you're in for a world of hurt now. I don't know. You ever been on one of these forums, Len? I've never even heard of this one, but I'm sure that like there are people who are on these things every day.
No, I've never heard of it, and I've never been on it. The closest I've ever seen was 4chan. I go there for every so often for a joke. Sometimes you just indirectly get to it, but 4chan is funny stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, different story. Different story.
Is that still in operation, by the way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't really go on 4chan. I'm more of a Reddit guy, but yeah, there's some. The 4chan's got some deep dark corners. You ever seen that 4chan? Is it a 4chan documentary or? God, what was the QAnon documentary where they talk about 4chan being the home of QAnon? You ever watch that? I think it's on Netflix.
No, I haven't.
But it's pretty good. It's like a 4-episode series.
I could see somebody making a strong argument for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want to. It is what it is.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever. That was Access of Easy. Don't forget, sign up. Newsletter, YouTube channel, podcast, wherever you get all that stuff. Come see Len and I every Friday for the latest and greatest in data breach and overreaching. And until next time, take care of yourself.
Yeah, take care.